And hello everyone, this is Robert McPhee and welcome to the latest of the series of expert calls that we are doing for the benefit of our participants in this final series of the Master Manifestors program. And the idea has been to bring in some perspectives from outside experts that really complement the conversation that we're having here about how to manifest the results that we want in our lives. We have had a variety of experts already, and I'm thrilled and pleased today to have a dear friend and one of my teachers and mentors who had offered to join us and share her perspective on manifesting and on, in particular, this topic that we've been focusing on this week, which is who am I, and also a topic that we're headed towards down the road called letting go of attachments. And we have with us today Dr. Deb Sandella, who I first met through my work with Jack Canfield. She has been a psychotherapist for over 35 years, which is impossible for me to believe. And she is an educator and the originator of an amazing technology called the RIM Method, which started with her book, I believe, Releasing the Inner Magician, Ways to Find Peace and Happiness. I'm not going to read Deb's entire bio. I'm just going to share with you, and having worked really closely with Deb, first of all, like I said, she's become a very close friend. She's just such an amazing person in terms of how she shows up in any circumstances. She and I have been in some pretty hairy situations, I'd say, and she's always very calm and very peaceful and really practices what she preaches. And the other thing I'll just say about Deb is I've had the opportunity to be an observer and a participant in her work with the RIM Method, and it really is quite profound. So as she's talking about her work tonight, as she's sharing her perspective, really encourage you to listen really closely and pay attention and really capture the essence of what she's sharing with us tonight. So Deb, thank you so much for being willing to join us and share your expertise. I'm thrilled to reconnect with you.
Well, thank you, Robert. It's a delight for me to be with you and to reconnect, because yes, we have had many experiences together, and,
and that's a separate call, I think, where we share all of those experiences. I was also thinking, yeah. You know, my book is Manifesting for Non-Gurus, and, you know, there's few people in my life that I really consider my gurus, and I think you're definitely one of them, one of the people who's point of view and perspective and advice I really treat with the greatest of reverence. So I'm just thrilled that we have the chance to talk about this today. And again, bring your perspective, because I know it really complements the work that I do. And you were around and working really closely with me when my work emerged. So you've had a chance to see it firsthand.
Which was very exciting to see that come forth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good. So one of the first things I wanted – well, actually, let me back up just a little bit before I dive in too deep and give you the opportunity to give us kind of a broad overview. I explained that you have developed this technology, this strategy for helping people to create more of the results, create more of the experience that they want to be having in life. But tell us just a little bit about the RIM Method and how that all came about, and just a little bit about how it all works.
Well, it was rather it was a rather dramatic experience for me. As you mentioned, I was a psychotherapist, and I had taught at the university. I'd done research. I, you know, had my doctorate, very very much incorporating a scientific view and the psychological view of life. And in 1995, my dad had a cardiac arrest at home, and I received a call from my brother that night in the middle of the night that they had taken him to the hospital, that his blood pressure wasn't holding, and they had given him all the medications possible to maintain his blood pressure, and it was not holding. So they wanted permission to not resuscitate. And I started my career as a nurse, so I, you know, am very understanding of the medical process and that these nurses were calling for a good reason, and yet my response was, like, very different. I responded quite angrily that no, I did not want to give my permission to not resuscitate, and that, you know, they had no idea what they were asking in letting somebody go that had been so meaningful, not just to me, but to so many people. And as I hung up the phone, I'm kind of in this emotional circle, cycle, vortex, whatever you want to call it, and I'm walking back to the bed, and I began having this spontaneous vision in my mind of seeing my dad walk off to the light, and I'm yelling and screaming at him, I don't want you to go, I'm not ready, I'm so angry that you're leaving me at this time. And then all of a sudden, he paused, and he turned, and he looked at me. And I'll never forget, you know, the peaceful, radiant look in his face. I had never seen that on him before. And then he said, oh, I didn't know you felt that way. Okay. And it was, you know, like I'm watching this, and it's like, oh, my God, I just it's almost like it didn't compute. And then all the anger in my body just drained away. And then my mind, my intellectual voice said, well, remember, this is just in your head, you know. And then yet, even though I knew it was just in my head, when I went back to bed, I just couldn't go to sleep. I had to stay connected to that vision. There was just something deep in my soul that just knew I had to stay. It felt like life and death, like I had to stay connected to my dad throughout the night. And then I left early in the morning to fly back to Kansas. I walked into ICU, and they said, sometime in the middle of the night, your dad's blood pressure started to hold. And I just, you know, I got goosebumps everywhere, and it was like, oh my goodness, what is this? So it ended up that my dad actually survived that experience and lived the next 5 years that he and my mom said were the really the happiest of their lives, because it was like a second chance, you know? It was an opportunity to realize what life is really all about. And I would say that was true for me, too, in facing his death. It was like a second chance for me in evaluating what's really important to me as well. So what happened in that is, you know, I knew, like, all of this scientific background that I had, it had no power at all in that situation to keep my dad from passing. And so all of a sudden, I felt such power in this place of this virtual, if you want to call it that, or this visionary, imaginary connection with him, that I was determined from that point further that I had to understand it. I had to know about it so that I could learn how to use it intentionally for healing. And so that began my journey, and that was in 1995. So that was quite a while ago. And it has been evolving in all kinds of ways since then.
I don't think I've ever heard that story from you. As
you
long
haven't?
As I've known you, I don't think I don't think I've ever heard you tell that story before.
Mm-hmm.
And it's such a powerful insight. You know, it's interesting. I feel like I'm getting it all backwards versus the people on the call who are hearing this story as they're getting to know you. And I've gotten to know you for years and years, and I've never heard that story. But it just I get how important that moment would be relative to the work that you do. So you talked about having that spontaneous vision. I think those were your words. I was trying to scribble notes as you were talking. But do you feel like for you, like you had you done work, had you set yourself up to be able to receive that spontaneous vision, to be open to it at that point, or was it more the circumstances you feel like that allowed you to receive that spontaneous vision?
It's a very good question, and I would say it was both. I had done a class on guided imagery in graduate school, but you know, the guided imagery back at that time and in our class was very superficial. It was like, you know, taking little balloon rides in your imagination and being pleasant, going to the beach and relaxing, those kinds of inducing those kinds of images. So so I did have that background of, like, having really enjoyed that and found that really really personally touching for me. So I'm very visual in the way I process information. I'm very visual. So that I was very aware that the visual use of imagination was very powerful for me and very effective. So I did become aware of that. And then the other part was, as I looked back through my life, particularly, you know, earlier, the times that I have really risked looking foolish are the times when it's like, I really don't care because this is so important to me because, it, you know, somebody I care about is at risk, or that there's something in front of me that is more important than my own ego or my own pride. And that I, at those moments, have risked stepping into playing and experimenting in ways that I would not normally do because it would have not been a psychotherapist thing to do. Or, you know, people might think it sounds crazy, that kind of thing. So that was really, I would say at that time, that is what happened. Now since then, and I would say it happened a few more times after that, and then I started to really get it, that I was, you know, I was playing in this traditional way as a professional and as a woman that was really limiting the natural expansion, so that it would have to come in these difficult moments. And so I started really opening to taking greater risks more purposefully. And, of course, that has made it much easier, and I don't have nearly the drama in my life that I used to have. And so so I would say it was some of both.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
It does. It does absolutely make sense. And I appreciate you kind of letting me put you on the spot with that question. But, and I find it interesting, too. I mean, I told you I was kind of started asking a question, then I paused and said, no, let's go back and take a look at this. But the question I was going to ask was kind of connecting to the topic that we've been talking about this week with who am I? But I think your story about your father and your story about that experience really allows us to tap into that sense of who we are being something much more significant, much deeper than, like you said, you know, the scientific background or the car that we drive or the house that we live in or the clothes that we wear or the amount of money that we make or all those kinds of things. There is that sense, and it sounds like you had a really profound experience of it, of there is something more going on here. There's something more to who we really are. Than just those kind of manifestations in the physical world. So
yes, absolutely. I completely agree with that. That it did really caused me to break through that veil of appearances, through the veil of what is things are supposed to be, and so I did. I stepped through that veil, and it was a very, very powerful time for me, spiritually, as well as in my relationship with my dad. That, as I said, it set the course for my future. And what it did is it caused me to begin to really discover and explore who we are beyond our psychology, beyond our feelings. Because, of course, in my professional background, that's what I had studied. And of course, that's very interesting. And Freud did develop the subconscious. However, Freud's interpretation of the subconscious is limited to repressed feelings. And of course, that is true. That is where repressed feelings, ignored feelings, kind of unknown feelings that we have, beliefs and feelings, are out of our awareness down in the subconscious. What I believe now that I didn't learn in school is that then beyond the subconscious, where the feelings are stored, the repressed and unknown unconscious feelings, is that which is out of our awareness that actually is greater, something greater than our humanity. And I call it unconscious because it's out of our awareness. Some people call it superconsciousness. You could call it, I guess, whatever you want. You could call it the great beyond. You could call it the intelligence of life itself. You could call it grace. You know, there's many names that different people call it. But it is also out of our awareness because it's invisible. And so what, you know, Freud opened our eyes to the part that there are invisible parts to us. Yet at that point in time, all that could be seen that was invisible to us were these monsters in the closet. What we now know, who we really are, is so much more than that. That also is invisible. And so that is, of course, the beautiful news, and it's also the difficult news because it's invisible. And in our culture, things that are invisible, you know, do not always carry credibility. Now, that's changing because our science is really changing, and physics with the exploration of quantum physics is really showing us that what you see isn't actually what you get when you go down into the microscopic level, the subatomic level. And that now they've even discovered, I'm sure you've heard it on the news, it's just been in the last few months, that they actually have identified the matter that they call the God particle, which is the stuff that holds the world together, that gives it some kind of cohesiveness, and yet it's invisible. And so we're moving in that direction where there's great scientific credibility for who we really are and how these invisible things work. But this is new. These are new things. I would say in the past when I was growing up, you know, what was invisible was considered, you know, a magician. That's what was a trick kind of a thing. And so it's
right.
a big paradigm shift about how we look at life, how we look at things.
Well, and I think, you know, you kind of touched on the fact that, you know, the world that we live in, we kind of like things to be measurable. We like them to be provable. We like to kind of bring the science to it and kind of make it rational and understandable. And you know me well enough to know that there's a strong side of me. That's kind of the way I grew up. But at the same time, I love venturing into these conversations about the more kind of invisible or ethereal or whatever. And that's part of what I love about your work is that you've, you know, opened up to a whole new possibility here, but you've also, in some ways, haven't you, taken pieces of other strategies and techniques and approaches and put them together in a way that you see really helps people. I mean, isn't the RIM method partially put together from pieces of other approaches?
Yes, in the very beginning, I really synthesized three techniques that I had been trained in, and each one was a great technique, but it just didn't feel like it did it all. And so, that was somatic therapy, Ericksonian hypnosis, and interactive guided imagery. And so what I found is that when I did do this kind of work with my clients, because back then I was doing traditional psychotherapy, I had a traditional psychotherapy practice, and when I used those kind of techniques, people took quantum leaps in their growth that when we were just talking in the typical traditional psychotherapeutic way, it wasn't at the same level. And so in the very beginning, I knew that I personally needed to move out of doing psychotherapy, that I was burned out, that I was feeling burdened by the expert role of needing to fix people. And so I knew that I needed to step out of that, and so I began experimenting by putting together these three techniques. And then after that, then it's just continued to evolve and develop in ways that include more and more and more, I would say, of nuances of how to how to access that which is invisible in the person and that which is invisible, let's say, available to the person. And so at this point, it is a combination of all of that, that there are pieces that came from the other techniques. The philosophy, though, is very, very different in that it's not as a skill to use with psychotherapy anymore. I mean, I never, from the beginning of creating it, I was very clear that I did not want to create a therapy or a treatment, because inherent in that is the belief that something's broken. And so you have to be treated for it. You know, you have to get medicine or surgery or whatever. And what was clear to me that in this process, what we, and it was only, this was clear to me as we moved along, and I really realized that I was creating a model, that what we're doing is we're accessing our inherent wholeness, which, you know, as you've mentioned, is who we really are, and that the experiences of life do accumulate on us kind of like dust on furniture, and that we start to feel kind of get confused, and we start to think that the dust is part of us. So we start to think that our experiences are who we are, and yet they aren't. You know, who we are is really this inherently whole being who have had temporary, transient experience, and that what's left of that experience really is just the memory. And we're no longer in that experience. We are whole during this whole time, but we get confused about that. And so the way that I think about RIM is that it's one of the techniques, and there, I know there are many techniques that do this, and the work you do does this, Robert. So this is something you and I share, that the work that we do really is a way of just dusting off those experiences that have accumulated that we started to confuse for being us, but it's not. And so when you dust it off, then what's revealed is your real self. And the technique itself, like the RIM technique itself, actually is designed at this point, and this is the part that I probably have created myself over the last 15 years as part of RIM that's different than the original techniques, is that there's skills that we learn of how to really access the wholeness and really feel the wholeness. So it's not just talking about the wholeness, but it's actually feel it. And so I know, like in your, I think in your work you use a meditation. Is that right? Part of the way that you do that is meditation. And so, similarly, one of the easiest ways to access who we really are is by first closing the eyes. Because through the visual channel, you're constantly taking in data into the brain that needs to be evaluated, and our kind of our primitive function back from caveman days to evaluate all the data around us so we can survive is still there. And it can be activated. And so when we close our eyes, we switch channels and move inward. It's almost like as we close our eyelids, it's like our vision can no longer go outward. So it's almost like we like to look at something, so we look inward. And as we look inward, sometimes there can be chatter, there can be feelings that we haven't been aware of that surface. And that's a very good thing, because as we recognize them, then they also can just go on their merry way, because those things are transient. So thoughts and feelings are transient states of awareness. They're not us. And their natural course is to come and go. And that's how that's how we're designed, is to have those thoughts and feelings come and go, and that they're just bringing us information to be used. And but sometimes we hop onto them and we start riding them like they're, you know, like we're holding on for dear life, like they're going to save our life if we let go. So that the process of having those thoughts and feelings, when you first close your eyes, whatever rises up, having it come into awareness is great. So the fantasy that that it's bad, that you have to stop that you have to quit your thinking, really is a misnomer. What it is that, no, you just, it's true that you allow them to not have power. So that what happens is you're actually diluting their emotional load, their the grip that they have on you. So we are doing that, but we don't have to stop them because we can't actually stop them.
Mm-hmm.
What we can do is slow them down, and one of the ways we slow them down is by allowing them to be received. Like, oh, okay, that's there. Interesting. So that's, you know, some people call that mindfulness, so that we're mindful of what our thoughts and feelings are. And it's like, oh, what an interesting thought. What an interesting feeling. I'm feeling that now. So we're mindful of it, but we don't have to dig into it. We don't have to react to it. We don't have to grip into it. Those are all choices that we have. And that as we're mindful of the feeling, it naturally dissolves, kind of like effervescence, you know, in a drink. As the bubble rises up, it pops, it comes to the surface, the carbon dioxide in the liquid rises to the surface, pops, and then it's gone. And so that's kind of what it's like in allowing those thoughts and feelings to rise to the surface. And then in REM, we actually then begin to have a very interactive, personally guided process into what's really going on in the invisible parts of the self. And so it's always so much fun because it's like, wow, who would have known this was here? So it's a very discovery-oriented process, I would say.
Well, I appreciate you even lumping me into the same category with RIM in terms of the work that we do. And I think when you talk about kind of dusting off, that might be a reasonable description of some of the work that we do or that I do. But I think based on what I've observed of some of the work that you do with RIM, it has so much more depth, I think. I actually recommend your work when we do get into that conversation about letting go of attachments, and we talk about, you know, bringing these attachments into people's awareness, and oftentimes just in bringing them into our awareness, we can make a choice to let them go. We can talk about work like, you know, we have a mutual friend, Hale Dwoskin, whose Sedona method work is one of the techniques that I recommend. But I have recommended the RIM technique as a strategy for people to use when we really, I mean, sometimes we find that people are, you know, I mean, I'm 53 years old, and you know, we can get pretty anchored into some of this stuff over years and years and years, and it isn't just a matter of bringing it into our awareness and letting it go. And I think one of the things that's so masterful about your work is the ability to discover what it is that's showing up as an attachment that might be, you know, hidden beneath layer after layer, and also the ability to truly feel that sense of letting it go. So I had hoped that you would be able to kind of take us through a short kind of a demonstration of what a RIM session is like. But I also want to ask you before we do that just about if there's anything you want to add to the conversation, to the kind of the point of view about letting go of attachments, either kind of some of the attachments that you see coming up for people or kind of what your approach is to helping people let go of the attachments. You know, we have a mutual friend, Jesse, who we worked with, and you know that Jesse and I had a mantra that it doesn't need to be difficult, and yet sometimes we make it difficult, right? But how does RIM fit into that whole conversation about letting go of attachments?
Well, I think that it's through the 15 years of really being involved with the RIM and sitting with thousands of clients and groups, that what is so amazing is that we don't really know what we're attached to. We have an idea of what we're attached to, but the specific image, the particular moment in time that has somehow rooted into our psyche, we don't really know what it is. And when we discover it, it's like pretty easy to change because we've developed many more resources since that time. And even just bring it into the light of day, it looks really different. So, for instance, there was a woman who came in who was having difficulty. She was in her late 20s, I think it was. And she was really wanting to find a boyfriend and get married and all of that. And it just was finding it very difficult. And so in her first session, she discovered that the moment in time that surfaced was in fifth grade, when, you know, all of us know, as girls particularly were, and boys too, but in a different way, were very sensitive and vulnerable about how we look. And that a fifth grade boy came up to her as she was standing in the cafeteria line and said, "You're ugly." Well, you know, what happened is this really anchored at some deep level of, like, that she wasn't attractive. And so she had gone through the rest of her life till that moment feeling unattractive. And it's really true. The way she carried herself, the way she carried her body, the way she dressed, the way she positioned herself, it felt like that was the vibe that she sent out into the world. It was like, I'm unattractive. And so as we worked with that memory and loosened it and redid it, what we actually discovered is the reason he did that, and this one is no surprise to those of us that are parents now, what the truth was is this fifth grade boy
I can't help but wonder how much credibility does any fifth grade boy have, but,
exactly.
But that's what happened,
well,
yeah.
What it was is he liked her. He liked her.
Oh.
And so, which is very common for fifth grade boys. When they like a girl, they start picking on her. So I know that happened with my daughter as well. So
it happens with older men too, I got to tell you. What are you going to do?
Well, thank you for sharing the secret here.
I'll just speak for my gender.
So what happened is after she redid this, this moment in time, she physically began to carry herself differently. She started to, in her face, her beauty was showing, and she actually, all of a sudden, she became a beautiful woman. It was just really transformational physically for her. I was quite amazed myself in just seeing her, being a witness to this physical change in her. And she did start dating, and about a year later, she got engaged and married. It was somewhere between, maybe she got engaged at 6 months, I think, and then married by the end of a year. Anyway, it really happened as soon as she did this work, because her whole sense of who she is changed. And so, you know, we've all seen that where people think something about themselves, and then that's what the image they portray through their body. Have you seen that,
mm-hmm.
Robert?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I can't help but chuckle at the fifth grade boy analogy, but I'm nodding my head right along with you, because this is, you know, we see it happen over and over again. And I actually just had a situation just recently where, you know, some conversations that I listened in on with my parents having when I was growing up were influencing me in ways I had no idea. I just had no idea on a conscious level how that was influencing me on a day-in, day-out basis. And bringing it into my awareness and reframing it in the sense of, well, obviously just the way this woman wouldn't let a fifth-grade boy dictate the way she was showing up in the world, you know, I wouldn't let a conversation going on, you know, whatever, 40-some-odd years ago between my parents dictate how I show up. But until it was brought into my awareness, I didn't have the ability to make that choice. So,
that's right. That's right. You're exactly right. So by just having the awareness, there's choice. And there's also reality testing, you know, that comes into play. And then we do, in REM, we do have some very specific techniques where we transform an unaffirming image into not only an affirming image, but an image that elicits a really positive, blissful state in the body. And so it gets anchored, because that's what the glue is to anchor images in the body, whether they're terror or they're bliss, that's how they get anchored. So we want to then re-anchor the new image in the body. So what happens is when somebody is bumping up against blocks, but they don't really know what they are, like they do everything that they can to be successful and it still isn't working, then you know there's something at the deeper invisible level that is operating that they're just unaware of. That's really how you can identify it. And that's really what I tell is when a REM session would be useful is if this is what you're noticing, that you're just not moving as quickly as you want, or you actually feel like you're being held back. Then there's something at the invisible level that is happening that you don't have a choice about, And so to be able to access it and have a choice just is so liberating. It's just such pure liberation.
Yeah.
I'm sure you felt that way, Robert, when you had that experience.
I really did. And I'm thinking, you know, as we're talking about this, I think we've done two things here. One is, you know, in terms of having you kind of demonstrate and take us on a little journey in the way that you do with the RIM method, we may have kind of scared people off a little bit by going as deep as we've gone and talking about the real power of this work. But I also know from my own experience in working with you that it can also just be a very kind of gentle and kind of light kind of a journey as well. And I think you touched on that earlier. I don't think this is the word that you used, but kind of just taking an observer kind of a point of view and not feeling like we need to get really attached or, you know, have some big problem that needs to get solved. But if
mm-hmm.
you're up for it, I would love it if we can kind of have you take us on a little RIM journey and get a little
sure.
bit of a sense. Because I think the other thing that's the nature of your work is that you can explain it. You can tell us what it's all about. But I got to believe that one thing that happens to you all the time is that once people have worked with you, they go, oh, now I understand what you were talking
right.
about, right?
Yeah.
So
can I
put you on the spot and ask you to do that for the group today?
Sure, I would be happy to do that. And would it be better for me to do a group process or to facilitate you and you'll be the kind of stand-in for everybody? Which do you think is better?
Well, I was thinking it was going to be a group process, but do you have a sense
that.
Either way? Or okay.
Yeah, we can do that. I'll go ahead and do a group process. So as we're doing the group process, I may ask you what your experience is. Is that okay?
That's fine. Yeah.
Right?
You know me. I'm going along with the group.
Right.
Don't
I know
get
you're
me wrong.
Playing.
I'm not going to put my phone up. I'm not going to set my phone down and go have a little snack or something. I'm in.
Well, it just, you know, then it helps ground it a little bit because then people, what I find is I do this a lot with the people in the RIM facilitator program where I'll do a group process and then people will just share a little phrase as we're going through. So that by hearing other people's experience, it's helpful. So what I would invite is the people who are listening to go through this in your own process, and then as you share your process, then that will be an additional information about what it can look like.
Okay, perfect.
Okay, good. So go ahead right now and just focus on your breathing. And as you focus on your breathing, let your next inhale take your attention all the way down into your belly and let it just rest right behind your belly button. And as you do, probably your shoulders will just sink towards the earth. As your whole body relaxes more. And as your attention is there right around your belly button, you'll be able to sense the inside of your body just like you could see, like a hologram, the inside of your body. And as you do, there's going to be some place in your body where you're going to sense it calling your attention. And it could be anywhere. It could be your chest, your belly, your heart, your shoulders, your hands, your feet, your head, anywhere. And as you notice the energy inside your body that is calling your attention right now, go ahead and give your attention over to it. And so where is the energy calling your attention, Robert?
It's like a band across my chest.
Mm-hmm. And as you sense whatever that image is, like a band across your chest or whatever the image is for you as the listener, go ahead and give your attention to it and begin to notice the specifics of it. and it may look like a specific object like a band, or it may be an amorphous energy. And so you'll just notice whether it is thick or thin. You'll notice how deep into your body it goes. You'll notice the color that your imagination is giving it right now. And you'll notice whatever other details about it that are becoming aware, coming into your awareness right now. And as you're aware of all these details, there's going to be one particular spot in or around this image that calls your attention the most intensely. And as you sense that one spot, go ahead and notice where it is and what the details of that spot, how they are, what you sense they are. And then go ahead and move into it with your attention. Go ahead and imagine being in that place, that spot, inside your body, in that energy, in that spot that called your attention most intensely. And as you're there, just go ahead and welcome whatever is there, allowing it to be just as best as you can. So whatever thoughts, words, feelings, images, memories, whatever's there, just welcome it as you are in the center of it. And so what are you noticing is there, Robert?
What I was noticing was that in this band that there was, only when I looked really closely, there was a little tiny hole, not
mm-hmm.
enough to kind of affect the structure of it or the strength of it, but there's this little tiny hole, and that I could go into that hole and see both outside of myself and inside of myself from there.
Mm. Cool. How's that feel?
It feels really actually opening, in the sense that when I'm inside that little tiny spot of a hole, it seems much bigger, like from
mm-hmm.
it's like zooming in on something, like with a zoom lens of a camera or something, and all of a
mm-hmm.
sudden it looks much bigger.
Mm-hmm.
So what was just a tiny little pinhole becomes this huge opening.
Mm, beautiful.
Actually, the constriction of the band seems to lessen as I look at it from that perspective.
Right. It's unimportant, less important. Mm-hmm. Yeah, good. Very good. And so as you're in this place, wherever it is, whether it's a hole that you can look out of and see outside and in and is an opening, or whether it's something else, go ahead and as you're in it, whomever that you need to speak to will just magically appear. Just like that. And as you have an awareness of whomever it is that you need to speak to, you'll also have an awareness of what it is that wants to be spoken to this person. And so in your mind, right now, go ahead and speak. And this it could be anyone. It could be a teacher, a family member, a friend. It could be yourself. It could be anything and anyone that you're needing to speak to. And so go ahead and speak whatever it is that wants to be spoken in your mind. Speak it. What wants to be spoken is, And what it's like to speak it to you now is, and as you're speaking, you'll also become aware of a spiritual mentor being with you. And the spiritual mentor has been there all along. And right now, you're going to become very aware of who is there as your spiritual mentor. And he could be an angel or a spirit guide or a deity of your faith. Or it could be a wise and loving ancestor. Or it could be anyone or anything that is safe and powerful and loving. And so whomever it is that has shown up as your spiritual mentor, you'll just know who that is right now, and you'll feel their presence right there with you. And it could be more than one, but there's at least one. And as you feel their presence, go ahead and receive the love and the support from them, just like a stream of colored energy flowing from them into you. And you'll just notice the color and the texture and the quality of this energy that is flowing right into your body. And wherever it enters your body, it begins to vibrate and circulate throughout all of your body, even up to the very top of your head, out to the very tips of your fingers, down to the very tips of your toes, into the very core of your spine, and out through every square inch into every pore of your skin. And it may even radiate out from you like an aura into the world. And as you receive this, go ahead and look back at the person to whom you were speaking. And go ahead and finish whatever else wants to be spoken. What I realize now is, and whenever you're done, you can thank that person for listening. And you can turn to your spiritual mentor and thank them for their love and support. And as you do, there's going to be the new feeling, whatever you're feeling right now in your body, will pop into your mind as one word. And so what is that one word, Robert, that's coming into your mind right now?
The word for me is potential.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like my awareness, my belief about my own potential has been expanded in this moment.
Beautiful. Beautiful. And so go ahead now and find the energy of this new word, the feeling, the word, what it's meaning. Find that energy in your body now. And it could even be all the way through your body, or it may be in one area. And you'll notice again its size, its shape, its color, its texture, all of that. It'll have its own essence. And so where is yours, Robert?
Mine is not in my heart, but around my heart, like surrounding my heart.
Beautiful. And what does it look like?
It's like a light, like an essence of light, but it's very red in color.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. And so now go ahead and move your attention right into that, this new energy of this word. And just let yourself swim in it, immerse yourself in it, play in it, delight in it, and actually be it. And as that happens, you may find that, the energy spreads throughout your whole body, or it may just prefer to stay in one area. Either way, it will deepen. And now just notice what you're experiencing. And right in front of you, your spiritual mentor is now going to create a magical movie screen. And as you look at this magical movie screen, your spiritual mentor is creating a movie of the rest of this week, your week, and what it looks like as you live in this new way. So for you, Robert, so as you live the pure energy of your full expanded potential, that's what this movie will display to you. And just like going to the movies, you're not creating it, you're just watching it. So your spiritual mentor is creating it for you, and you're receiving it. So go ahead and watch this movie of the rest of this week, and you'll just notice what stands out about how you are, how you're being, how you're walking, talking, deciding, all of that. And so just take a moment to sense that now. And so, Robert, just let me know when you're done. We'll use you as the timer.
It may be a very long call. I don't know.
So let me know when you have seen this week.
I have seen this week.
Okay, very good. And so I'm going to invite everybody else to also notice what's different. And so what did you notice about this coming week that's different in this movie?
What I saw in the movie and really felt and experienced in the movie was a level of energy. I saw a lot of communication with me and other people, clients, potential clients, friends, family, but it was the energy level, the really high energy level, not like frenetic, but just really up energy level that was present in all those interactions.
Great.
Really
wonderful.
Really good feeling, yeah.
Yeah, great. And so go ahead and rewind that movie. Jump into character and actually imagine living it rather than watching it. It sounds like you already did some of that. So this time, just let it go full force to live it. And just let me know when that's done.
Okay.
Good. And so now that movie is going to just find its perfect place either in or around your body or both so that it's always available to you. And as it does, it automatically is also there on your subconscious screensaver, flashing across your unconscious mind millions of times every split second without you even thinking about it. And then as you're ready, you can just sense that full feeling is returning to your arms and legs, your hands and feet, your fingers and toes, letting you know that this work is complete. And your subconscious mind will let you know that it's all completely done by spontaneously opening your eyes.
Feel a little selfish. You're such a master.
It was fun. It was great. Yeah.
Oh, that was really powerful. I'm really glad
yeah.
that was recorded.
Yes, me too. And thank you for sharing your experience, because I think it was very powerful for others to hear.
Well, it was for me. It was very powerful. And, you know, it's so funny. I've experienced your work I don't know how many times before, but one of the things I love about it, and I think it really opens me up to being able to receive the work you do, is the kind of the playfulness that you bring to it as well. Like even right there at the end where you're saying, you know, this is just going to be accessible to you. Just find a place to put it. And who knew I had like a little hook right on the inside of my right ear. I just had a little place to just hook it right there.
I love
but there's
that.
Not like this, oh, my God, I need to find a right place for it. It's just like, oh, yeah, you know, there's a place. Where are you going to put it? And there's no,
uh-huh.
like, have to, need to kind of energy around
right.
it. So I just love it, and I love the way you do it.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. So, and it really does relate to what was the purpose of our call, which is who we really are, because who we really are actually knows the answers to all those things, but that's not our thinking brain.
I agree. I totally agree. And it really is an opportunity to step in and, you know, I will go through and listen to that again. And in doing that, it really is an opportunity to just be who I am in that
right.
conversation. And what else could you do? And what
right.
It's just be who
exactly.
you are. Exactly. So,
and that really is the purpose of REM, is that there is no other thing. That, like we tell clients, you cannot do it wrong. There's no way you can do it wrong, because whatever you say is right. And that it's our, you know, it's our job to guide you to, you know, so that whatever is said is going deeper and deeper, but you can't do it wrong.
Oh. I'm really careful saying that to men, because they'll take it as a challenge. Oh, yes, I can.
Oh, that's cute. I like
that. Oh, man. Well, I'm looking at the clock and realizing that we've definitely used up our allotted time here, and I'm so grateful to you for sharing. And I know, you know, we could go another hour and another hour and another hour, I know, knowing you and me. but I know also that you've really piqued people's curiosity about this work that you're doing. I'm sure there's a lot of people that would like to know more about your work. And if they want to know more about you and your work, what is the best way for them to connect with you?
Yes, well, they can, of course, they could email me at drdeb@rim, R-I-M, Institute, INSTITUTE.com. You can also go log on to the website, which is riminstitute.com. And so those would be the places, you know, that we can have an individual conversation if you have some specific thoughts or questions, or you can go onto the website. I do still do some private sessions. I don't do a full-time private practice because more of my work is in teaching the REM technique and also doing retreats, so that the new class to learn how to be a REM facilitator starts June the 19th in, at Long Beach, California. And so if you have anybody who's interested in that, of course, I would love to hear from you. And I will also be doing a personal growth retreat at the Kripalu Retreat Center in Western Massachusetts.
Oh, really? Good for you.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So I'm very excited about that. That's June the 30th to July the 3rd. And would really welcome people. It's very priced very reasonably because it's through Kripalu, and they have a great balanced program with yoga and body work, and it's in the Berkshire Mountains, so it's quite beautiful. But I think it's $255 for the workshop itself.
Really?
And then the housing can go, depending on your choice of kind of housing, the housing and meals together can start someplace around $100 a day. So it's very, very reasonably priced to have a really
wow.
wonderful retreat. So yes, and I would love to interact with anybody who's interested, And,
okay.
And I always, and I love your work, Robert, as well as love you. And so any way that I can support you and support your clients, you know, I'm here.
Good, good. Well, I appreciate it. And this has just been amazing. Like I said, I'm so glad that we captured it. This is one of those calls that, well, I'm thinking two things. One is, you know, I may make it available just to my general community in addition to this Master Manifestors group, because I just think it would be so valuable. I'll check with you and make sure that's okay.
Sure.
But, and obviously I'll send you the recording as well so you can share it with your group.
Right.
But, you know, it's so valuable and so wonderful to, God, I feel, I just get goosebumps. the other thing I would point out to people, I know, you know, you created an amazing audio program called Awakening Power with Jack Canfield, who you and I both met through, and that's another amazing resource if people are interested in your work, and I know that's available at the riminstitute.com site as well. So
thank
people
you.
Can connect with me if they want to know more about you. I've got some deep, dark secrets about Deb that I'll be happy to share, but no.
Yes,
so thank you so much. I am deeply grateful for you being willing to share your expertise and this perspective, and I think we've given people a real gift on this call. So I appreciate it, and I look forward to we need to see each other soon. It's been too long.
I know. I feel the same way. Definitely.
All right, well, we'll make that happen somehow, some way.
Yeah.
Thank you. And, again, I would highly recommend for anyone listening to this call, either on the live call or listening to the recording, Deb is the real deal. If you have the opportunity and are called to pursue other work with her, I highly recommend that. It's incredibly valuable. So good morning, good evening, good day to those of you listening to the recording. And, Deb, thanks again. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, Robert.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.